Session number 24931, George Simmons, reels 3 and 4. Left channel informants mic only, right channel interviewers mic.
Mr. Simmons, reel 3. So what was a typical day like when you were in the front line like that, you know, in the trench, stuck in the summer? Well, how would you spend, how would the day start?
Well, the day started actually with you know, you'd move forward. If you were stuck in the trench, it was
stuck
monotonous
in the trench.
In a sense.
Well, tell me what would happen. How would the day start?
Well, there was, you just used to. Maybe if you're in, it was a two-man trench. It wasn't like the first
one. Well, describe the trenches.
It was only
the slit trenches.
The slit trenches.
So, what was a slit trench like?
Damn mucky, because you had to do your toilets in there, you know, and etc. And maybe you did have, you might have had a ration or something you'd saved.
You know. How deep would it be?
Now then.
About what size for two of you?
4 foot deep, I would say. No deeper than that. They weren't 6 foot, I know, because we weren't 6 footers. And you.
And how wide?
And obviously your head, that would be about, at the most, 3 foot wide.
And how long?
And maybe 6 foot long, because there was.
That'd be for two of you?
That'd be for a two-man trench.
And, you know, what was it like in there?
Well, it was monotonous, really, in a sense.
Would you ever stand to?
Well, stand to was mostly in the morning. That was when you expected an attack, say, at the dawn.
What would you do on stand to?
Well, you just stood there, ready, listening for any movement or any noise out in the front. You know, aye.
And then after that, would you have a sentry rotor, or was it just the two of you taking it in turns? How was it organized?
Well, if you was, we had been back in a village, if you took over a village.
I mean more when you're in trenches, you know. How would you sort out who was on lookout? Or would you have a sentry, or how was it sorted?
Well, mostly, if it was at night, everybody was stood to. During the day, you took it in turns.
The two of you?
The two of you. Mine would be sort of half and half asleep. The other one would be, you know, next door, the kids' children. One would say, get your head down for 5 minutes, you know, or half an hour. Then I'll do it, you know, except take it in rotor, just in case something turned up.
And would you actually look over the top, or would you just...
No, there were no periscopes, but you had to be very careful, because you mostly aligned them, say, if there were some bushes or something around, you know, where you could sort of get a bit of cover. But mostly it was a bit dicey, really, just in case, you know, somebody, because there's been times when you just... You have sort of made yourself. Somebody observed you, Jerry, and you'd get a stonk down in no time.
Now, what was it like under a stonk? You mean mortars?
Mortar bombs.
What was German mortar fire like?
Oh, well, they had what they call the Nebelwaffe. I don't know if you've ever heard that, have you? Multi-barrel
mortar. What was that
like? Well, it was a bit frightening, actually, because you knew when they were going to come, because it was somebody like. Somebody being sick, you go moop, 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 and you see them leaving the barrels coming. So, you know, you knew in for it. Now, with shellfire.
Hang on, what was it like when the Nebelwerfers landed?
Well, actually, it was. They weren't like a big shell. It was.
They were just mortar shells.
Mortar shells, but they were multi barreled. So you plump, 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 plump. You know, they sort of. Covered the fair area.
What
you
would you do?
Well, what could you do? You just stuck your head down and hope for the best. You couldn't run if you were in a trench, obviously.
So it was just a matter of staying put.
Staying put.
Hoping one didn't...
Hoping for the best.
And hoping one didn't land in with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you were saying about shellfire.
Well, shellfire was different.
In what way?
Well, in a sense, if you've run a forward slope, you never hear it coming. You know, you could... Well, if it was a distance away, I'm telling a lie, because you could hear the... You might hear the boom, you know. At night, you'd see the flash. You see the flash, then you'd... But if you was on a reverse slope, you never bothered, because straight over, where mortars down, you know, straight up and down. So mortars, actually, you were never safe behind a ridge. But with shell fire, you were. If you were behind a ridge, you know, in a reverse, in a reserve position, you were fairly safe, apart from mortars. But...
And what about sniping? Was sniping a problem?
Not a big problem, no. No, I never come across it. Never come across it. We had to do one or two at that one-time job, you know. There was one or two, I believe.
German snipers.
One fella, the fella who actually would remember his name, but one fella got a Spandau. Spandau. Right through his helmet. And just sort of grazed his head. He showed us the can't believe it. There's a Parkinson. I was in the but he's died a few years ago.
Was there many lucky escapes like that?
I'd say that, yeah. Yeah, one fella I know on that, talking about a Stonk Hill. I remember a friend of mine, he dived in the trench, and this other fella dived on top of him. And he said, hey, was it John? John, get it. Okay, because the shelling had stopped, so he said, come on, don't mess about. It got him in the back. He was killed, you know, right.
That was Stonk Hill. Where was Stonk Hill?
That was facing Caprese. Near Arezzo was Stonk Hill. Yeah. Another item with that I call to mind was, I don't know whether you know, you talk about the mechanised infantry, but do you know we were supplied most of the time with mules? There was muleteers, and it was on Stonk Hill. You know, apparently, most of them was Indians. You know, muleteers used to bring the rations up to us. And anyway, I was with this fellow Parkinson on Cowden Road. I thought, what the hell's there? I thought it's horses, and it was. I couldn't believe it. I thought, well, the Germans putting a cavalry charge in. What had happened was the muleteers had gone right through our lines. I suddenly realised, so they'd come back. And these all... these mule... I said, hey, listen. He said, it's damned horses, hoofs. We thought a cavalry charge was coming in. We thought, it's, you know, way back in Wallian's time. But anyway, then, you know, always friendly. Three gradually, hello, you know, coming through. But you can't believe it.
How did you get on? I mean, you were in the 10th Indian Division. How did you get on with the Indian units, the Indian personnel?
The Gurkhas were super. Super.
What was so good about them?
Oh, they were... They enjoyed the war. That's why. They liked it. We used to come back off fighting patrols, miserable as hell. They used to come back laughing. Tika Johnny, they were full of fun. Full of fun, they were. But I say that.
What about the Baluchs? The
Baluchas, there was. We had Punjabis, Marathas, Gurkhas, Sikhs, Garwalis, all the different.
Did you get on with them all equally well? Could you tell the difference between them?
No, you didn't mix with them a lot. No, they all kept their cells more or less.
Including the Gurkhas?
Including the Gurkhas, although I remember I told our what's the artist head of,
tell me then
our president once, well actually we'd pulled out of the line, and obviously as I told you the rations were sparse sometimes, so we used to go on recce partings. They used to send round, you know, did battalions say you're not to touch the livestock or anything like that. Anyway, I went out with this fella called Boardman, and we there was a Gurkha on this. It was an Italian house, a few houses, like farmhouses and that, you know. And he was on the front. Hello, Johnny, Teak guy. Went round the back, and I don't know where they put my hair, ready for the pop. But there was a Charlie, what? Look in here, in this fence enclosure. There was two geese and about five chickens. And I said, hey, look, we get one. I said, well, we got, it's a lock on there. Anyway, he said, come here. And he lifted it off his hinges. I grabbed the goose. Charlie Boardman grabbed a chicken. Anyway, put it back. As we were going up the road, Peter, this damn goose goes, quack, quack, quack. Oh, Christ. I gets me penknife out, me arm, and I was sawing his bleeding head. I thought, well, it's either your head or mine, because some Gurkhas catch us. So I'm sawing his damn head off. He said, stop that damn goose, did Boardman. Anyway, I told him how president he laughed his head off. Way back, a few years ago. But they were a grand lot in my book.
Tell us about some of your friends. Charlie Boardman, that was one of your mates.
Oh, yeah.
What was he like? Tell us.
Oh, he was very stocky built fella. Aye. He'd been on Malta, and he was quite a card, actually. He was he could tell you some tales. Oh, God.
Went
on Malta.
He was one of your best mates, was he?
Well, you didn't.
How did you get on with the lads? I mean, was
very
it...
good. Never, I would never without you know, friends. I don't know why. I suppose I could, you know, I was never. It might be. I don't know.
Was it a very strong sort of comradeship you had? I mean, especially...
Well, not in a sense, because you didn't know from day to day, Peter, whether you were going to get your lot or you were, you know, you didn't. It was always, although I say you never thought about them things when you were young, you know. But there was some laughable... There used to be one fella there, a Charlie... It wasn't Boardman, it was another fella called Charlie. Oh, hell. Very good on watches, you know. And I remember this village near, just before we took Montone, there was a village there. Well, now, what was it called? It was just before Chitty Di Castello, I think. And it had been fairly well shelled, bombed, you know. And there was like a clock. A village clock over this arch, you know, and all of a sudden the damn shell hits it, wham, and it comes to the ground. Hey, Charlie! Somebody shout, there's a clock here for you to mend. But some old deer coming down the old road now, I felt sorry for her. Some old, oh, she must have been about 70 or 80, hovering down the road. I felt sorry for a lot of these old people. Yeah. Well, I say, you don't make a bigger bond with anybody because you never know from day to day. and I say, I'll say this much, you get very callous during the war because you see so many things, you know. I always remember one fella there, these muleteers, it was because there was a dead horse there, and all there was there was an army boot with just the top of the bone sticking out of it. And, you know, to make a joke of it, a thing like that, you know, you wouldn't think about it in civilian life, would you, if you see an accident on the road. And yet during the war, it was hey, look, there's a good pair of shoes there, you know, a good pair of boots, you know, things like that. You know, as I say, you get very callous, Peter, you get very callous, I think. Seeing a body there. I say, if I see a body out on it, I'd probably, you know, be as sick as a dog now. I don't know, but you didn't bother then. To see,
Right, now, the next thing you want to talk about is the action on Perdura Ridge. Yeah. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but tell me what happened there.
Well, we were waiting to relieve the Indians there, and that ridge there, Perdura Ridge, the Indians were being stomped to hell. And all of us, it was like a valley. We were on the other side, and we could see the ridge. And anyway, they come all of a sudden. They come streaming out of the ridge, yes, from the houses. The shelling, they nearly knocked the down house down. They come streaming out down the valley. Did the Indians, but anyway, we pulled back, and we had to go in the following night, and I think that's when one of our lads, twins actually, got shot, a fella called Stapleton. There were George, one of the twins got shot that night, and Major Warren, I've got a letter here from Major Warren. He mentions about just.
Well, it's not. Is that?
Oh no, it's not to do with that either. anyway, he, I believe Warren got the MC on that Perdura Ridge.
Did you see what happened to him?
No, he lived. Yeah. But I didn't see the actual.
No, well, okay.
I was on the ridge.
Happened to you? That's what we're interested in. Not
well, we took the. I was with the. I had to take the Piat, the Piat gun, which obviously you know about. It is anti-tank weapon during the war with the Piat gun. It's a personal infantry gun. But anyway. That was before they had the bazookas. I think the Germans had the bazookas. But I had to carry it up there, and it was heaving it down, heaving it down.
This is December 1944.
It was heaving it down. It was full of mud. Anyway, we got up there onto the ridge, and we settled in. That Stapleton got killed. And during the day, they had an OP officer, artillery, out in the front. His assistant got killed. There was a donkey there with him. He died as well. It was a heck.
What happened to you?
Well, I was, while I was up there, I was. We were waiting. We had a cook with us here because it was a house. And he'd made all the nice brew there with it. I was holding me Dixie out there with tea in it. All of a sudden, a shell comes through the damn roof. Me Dixie's full of malta from the ceiling. So that was an enjoyable drink, was that?
Well, what about the fighting? Were you involved in any of the fighting on Perdura Ridge?
Yeah, we went. We was. Well, I say the jury chased off. We were chasing the jury off there. I think they were actually pulling back. Anyway, the day after they cleared off, as I say, that was Stapleton. I was laying with his brother on the roof when he got killed. This machine gun opened up, and he said he knew it was his brother. He shouted his name out, George, Jack. It was Jack I was very friendly with, and there was Jack and George. Well, I was laying next to George. Anyway, he shouted his name at Jack. He knew it was his brother because this voice come out. He dashed downstairs, and it was his brother. But he'd got very badly hit, and he died. That was one of the twins, you know. I still go up to them and turn the page up at the Priory Church, you know, and his name's all. I also look at his name on there. Lieutenant Lowe's up there as well in there.
What else happened on Perdura Ridge? Well, apparently it was a big German counterattack there.
That was I.
On Perdura Ridge?
Yeah. Well, actually, it was. We relieved It wasn't the Indians there. Did I say the Indians there? It was the Hampshire Regiment. And anyway, A Company went forward. A Company went forward. It was the bottom end of the ridge. A Company went, and a big counterattack come in. That started, we were stood by as reserve. We were even that near. We could hear the Germans screaming as they come in, shouting and screaming. But we had two Sherman tanks up there. Anyway, they beat it off, and we had to go in the following night. But it was a near do there, because I thought they weren't going to hold it. Right, we were just waiting to go, you know, to go in. To relieve them. Aye. But thank goodness.
And then what do you remember happening after Padura Ridge?
Padura, yeah. Well, I remember now then on that Padura Ridge there, when they cleared off, I went on a little recce on my own.
What, a solo one?
A solo one.
Tell me about that.
And it, I went down to this farmhouse below the ridge. The Germans were pulling back, like. I think all the officers had gone on had been called to a conference, you know.
An O group?
Yeah, they were called on it because it was more or less, we were in a sense then, a static position. And I wandered off on a little recce on my own. I went down this...
So why did you do that?
I don't know, I'm just looking for loot, looking for, see if there's any fowls or chickens around. But anyway, I went down to this farmhouse, and I thought it was nobody there. Anyway, I had a Tommy gun with me, obviously, and all my weapon, that, and I could hear this noise, and I shouted down, and these Italians come up, with their hands up and that, you know. Anyway, I said, Dovi, Tedeschi, no, via, they veered, you know, gone. I said, have they left any weapons or anything? Like, yes, yeah, see, you know what they left? Radios, three. I said, get loaded up. And I took them. I was going up the hill where I'd run down. No, you won't believe it. There were shoe mines there. How the hell I missed them, I don't know. The Germans had put shoe mines there. So, and the Italian said, no, you know. They took me round and guided me out. I said, come on, back to you. You got cigarettes, you know. Bring them radios back. And I give them to the pioneer sergeant, these radios. Three German radios. Big.
So you had no idea you were going through a minefield? Or
no idea.
Shoe mines.
It was only like a... No idea. And they were just these. They just pointed them out after. They were like shoe mines, you know, just for anti-personnel.
What did they look like?
Well, all them just three pins stuck up in the out of the ground like that. So anybody, say you're running down or at night time, you kick a woof, you'd lose a leg or a limb or anything.
Were mines a big problem, or was it something you thought about?
Not, they weren't too big a problem there. I think a lot of places, they were in the desert and that, they were.
What about booby traps?
Now then, there was quite a few that were in one place when we first went to Italy.
Now, had you been warned about booby traps?
Yeah, picking things up. Somebody had picked some Italian, item up, and it blew up and he lost both his hands one of his hands, so he was out of the fight, wasn't he?
So how did you avoid them? What did you have to do to be careful?
Well, make damn sure you know that you didn't hand anything you didn't know about. I say that time on Caprese, where these Italians came out. They came out with there were a couple of German stick grenades there. Also, they come out with these Italian grenades, which there was sort of had a tape on, which presumably you threw them and the tape unwound itself. I never even attempted.
Did you ever come across any German booby traps, or were you just aware of the danger of them?
I can't say, no, I didn't. No, we're aware of them.
Just careful.
No, I can't say I've actually, myself personally, obviously, I believe other people in the unit had come across them, but I never personally. But
tell me about this Piat. Had you actually been trained to use the Piat?
Yeah.
When did that happen?
Oh, that was during the training.
And were you actually on the Piat, or was that just you were carrying it that day?
I was carrying it that day.
But you weren't normally on it. You were on it?
Oh, right, yeah.
Well, tell me what it was like. How did it work, and what was it like to operate?
You cocked it, but you put it was like a shell, and you placed it in the forefront of it. It was like, and there was a nozzle on the front which struck the... it had to be primed, you know, but it struck the... your target, which obviously you were hoping it would be a tank, and it was instantaneous, like there was like a charge detonating it.
What was it like when it went off?
Oh, quite a bang.
Did you ever fire in action, then?
I never fired one in action. I fired it on training, but never fired it in action.
Do you think it was a good weapon?
Well, for the time, yes. But I say most of the other weapons, I think the bazooka was superior. Yeah.
Why? Why was the bazooka?
Well, I think...
You didn't use that, I presume, but you knew... What was better about the bazooka?
Well, I think the handling of it, and also it seemed a bit crude, in a sense, that the appeared, because you had to sort of load it from the front. You know, whereas a bazooka, it was that long. And I think it had got a greater range, had the bazooka, if I remember rightly. I never fired one, but I had seen them with the Americans that got that type, and also the Germans had them. They seemed superior. Ours seemed a bit outdated, I think, myself. Yeah. I was never happy with them.
But how come you were on it, but you didn't fire it? I mean,
well, I fired it in training.
No, but I mean, if you were carrying it in battle, how come you didn't use it in battle?
Well, I never come up straight against a tank. Never come up.
Were you always carrying it then?
No,
just that.
No,
right.
You took turns. It were like the flamethrower. But I never carried that. But you got tuppence extra for carrying that because it was dangerous. It was dangerous. Was carrying the, because if a shrapnel hit it, you had it. Have you ever seen them?
No. Tell us about that.
Well, that's actually on your back. It's a backpack. It's like like when you're going underwater there with a cylinder on your back. Well, this was cylinder full of for a gas for.
Had you actually practiced using it as a,
Yeah, in training.
What was it like to fire then?
It was all right, yeah. It was a bit of a laugh, really.
What range did it have? Roughly.
Oh, hell. About 20 yards, I suppose, something like that, yeah.
But you never used it in action?
Never used it in action, no. Well, I know the fella...
Did people worry about carrying it, or being given the job of carrying it?
I don't think so, no. Think so. Well, we had a fella called Ackwater, I remember him carrying it, because he got tuppence extra.